Recording in progress.
Panchakalpa Chupyascha Kripasindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Okay, thank you all for being here.
Recording stopped.
Oops. So we are on our last chapter today. Next week we're going to have a review. A summary and review, which I think, considering the complexity of these topics, will be very helpful. Okay, so we're in the Southern Ocean of the Nectar Devotion. This is Nectar Devotion, chapters 20 to 34, which is about Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vyavichari Bhava, and Stai Bhava. And we're in the fifth wave, which concerns Stai Bhava. And we're at part 3. So in part 1, we discuss the primary sthayi bhavas. In part 2, the secondary sthayi bhavas. And here in part 3, it's overlooking about sthayi bhava and rasa in general. So this is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2573 to 132. I apologize. In the syllabus, my figuring out which verses... I did that in the very beginning, and as I went through, I realized that coordinating the chapters with the verses was not exactly the same. So this is our components of rasa. Today we're mostly going to be talking about rasa. So the summary of this chapter, this section, is that rasa means when all the bhavas combine to form taste. Poetry and drama can produce rasa if done and received properly. Rasa comes from the spiritual pleasure of potency. And if we're immature in bhakti, we can just get some hints of rasa. It can refer to primary or secondary basic relationships, each of which have an associated color and presiding deity. And all rasas are joyful. The expert devotees can understand rasa, but inexperienced persons cannot. So, we're going to look at the nature of rasa. Now, throughout these presentations, we've been using the term sthayi bhava, or basic relationship. Now, this term sthayi bhava is when rasa is not experienced. When a devotee is experiencing rasa, when everything comes together to experience rasa, then the basic relationship is not called sthayi bhava anymore, it's called rasa. So we've noted, I'm sure you've all noted, that Srila Prabhupada primarily uses the term rasa. Rather than, he'll say there's five rasas, there's five primary rasas, there's seven secondary rasas, rather than the term sthayi bhava. So again, sthayi bhava is used when we're analyzing it separately, but when an individual is experiencing all of them together as a taste, then rasa can refer to the whole experience. And it can also refer to the sthayi bhava. Now, looking at the various emotions that arise in the bhavas, things like we talked about in the vyavichari bhavas, so Rupa Goswami explains that pride, jubilation, sleep, and joking in the material world come from rajaguna. Despair, lowness, bewilderment, and lamentation arise from tamaguna. But spiritually, everything comes from Krishna's presence and transcendent happiness. So in other words, materially, if I'm lamenting, that means I'm overwhelmed by tamaguna. Oh, my life is useless. Nobody loves me. I'm unworthy. Now I've offended people. And I won't have any friends anymore. I've lost all my money. I'm in tamaguna. But spiritually, when a person is experiencing any of these vyavichari bhavas, they're going to be experiencing ecstatically. As far as which come from which gunas, this is Rupa Goswami's analysis, so I'm just repeating. Okay. So, materially, we think of some emotions as pleasurable and some as painful. Right? Materially, we're like, oh, comedy, that's pleasurable, and disgust is painful. But spiritually, the apparently painful emotions can give the highest and most intense bliss. Now, we're going to be discussing this at length in the second portion of the class. So we've shown different charts of how these different bhavas come together. And, you know, we've had our main chart, which is really a simplification. Always keep in mind that whenever you simplify things, you distort them to some extent. So really the interchange and the interplay of these bhavas is complex, and it can be seen in many different ways. We've had many different charts throughout this presentation according to how Rupa Goswami explains them. So here's another way of explaining them, that the primary and secondary sthayi bhavas, when we hear about Krishna and or experience Krishna, then we experience the vibhavas, anubhavas, sattvika bhavas, and vyabhichari bhavas. So do we call it rasa, or do we call it the various bhavas? So this is a picture of a blender with different ingredients in it, right? There's yogurt, there's spinach, there's, looks like mango, and dates, and strawberries. So they're all separate, like we can have the vibhavas, the vyabhichari bhavas, etc. But when we blend them, then they're rasa. So if these bhavas don't attain the nature of rasa by serving the sthayi bhava and thus remain independent, then they are considered to be the 33 vyabhichari bhavas, the 8 sattvika bhavas, and the 8 ratis. Ratis, 8 ratis, because you have one primary sthayi bhava of, let's say, friendship, and then you have the 7 secondary sthayi bhavas, like anger, comedy, etc. So each individual is going to be experiencing 8 sthayi bhavas. So that they're considered separately if rasa isn't there. But when rasa is there, then it's different. And Rupa Goswami is giving the example that yogurt becomes rasala by mixing with sugar and pepper. So we've all had a lassi, I assume. So then the primary and secondary rati is a synonym for sthayi bhava, become rasa by combination of the elements of vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, and vyabhichari bhava. So when all of those are combining in a person, they experience rasa. Just like when you combine these different ingredients, you get a rasala, you get a lassi. Now, when you're drinking this lassi, you're getting one taste, but you can recognize, you can pick out, here's the pepper, here's the sugar. So you can pick out the individual components, yeah? You're eating something, you're like, oh, there's cardamom in here, or there's basil in here. But yet it's one taste. So first the ingredients are distinct. Now here's vibhava, here's sthayi bhava, here's the sattvika bhava. But when they're mixing, they assume a kind of oneness. So in rasa, the vibhava and the other elements, they become one entity in rasa, but still subtly, one can make out these different elements. So we've discussed at length how some bhavas are the causes or effects of other bhavas, right? That vibhava stimulates the sthayi bhava, and then that produces the sattva in the heart, and then the sattva in the heart gives rise to the sattvika bhavas and the anubhavas, right? And the vyabhichari bhavas come and stimulate the sthayi bhavas. And then we also talked about with the vyabhichari bhavas, one vyabhichari bhava can cause another vyabhichari bhava. And we talked about which, you know, some vyabhichari bhavas are caused by seeing a dear object, seeing Krishna. Some vyabhichari bhavas are caused by hearing about Krishna. Right? So we've talked about their cause and effect, But when they're rasa, we no longer see them as cause and effect. It's just one overall taste with all these subtleties in it. All right, I'm going to stop just for a few minutes, just 5 minutes. If any of you have any questions or comments on what we've discussed so far. Prabhupada Priya?
You were saying that they're still subtly detectable, the different components of rasa.
Yes.
But then you also said that the causes and effects are kind of disappear. So how is it that they're detectable and not detectable?
Okay, so let's say I'm going to make dal, and I put some ghee in my pot. At least this is how I make dal. Maybe some of you have a different process. I put some ghee in my pot, and then I have some real asafoetida, by the way. I've got actually chunks of asafoetida resin. Ooh, completely pure. And so in my, it's really potent. So in my ghee, I'm going to pick off a few chunks of asafoetida, and I'm going to put that in my ghee, and then I'm also going to fry other spices in my ghee. And when I fry these spices in my ghee, the taste of the spices increases. It changes and it increases. Right? And then I'm going to add, I've washed my beans and put them on the side, so after these spices, then I'm going to put in my water and my beans. And it's going to cook together. And then I may throw in some herbs, right? I've got gardens around here and I've got fresh herbs, so and I cut up my, I've got sage, and I've got basil, and I've got mint, and I've got rosemary, all fresh. So I'm going to wash those, I'm going to cut them up, and I'm going to throw them in. And so there's different causes and effects happening. The ghee is releasing flavors in the spices. Right? The boiling is releasing flavors in the herbs. I was just reading how cooking, when you cook food, that, and I've studied this before in Ayurveda, it's like pre-digesting food. Mm-hmm. And you actually get more calories and more nutrients from food if you've cooked it than if you eat it without cooking. But those causes and effects are no longer obvious when I'm drinking the dal. So when I'm drinking the dal, I'm experiencing one flavor. Yes, I'm experiencing one flavor, but I can also kind of, wow, I can taste there's a little asafoetida here. I can taste there's a little mint there. But the fact that I can, maybe I can even tell that there's ghee in there, and if I didn't use ghee, if I used olive oil, you could tell that there was olive oil. So, but I can no longer sense the fact that the cooking in ghee released the asafoetida, and the boiling released the spices. Those cause and effect is lost. So Rukmini asked, does this mixing happen in the stage of bhava or prema? It certainly appears that it happens in prema. And that particularly is from what we'll be discussing in the last part about the five different types of people that Prabhupada just puts them into two categories of inexperienced or expert. And Rupa Goswami and the Jiva Goswami also, they're categorizing five, and it certainly appears that this rasa happens at prema. So any other questions on this point before we move on? All right, we have a very nice... Somebody else? Yes? No? We have a very nice section here on poetry and drama about the Lord. And as we're going through this section, we're going to have a breakout group about this section at the end. So I'd like you to think about or take notes about your experiences with drama, with watching dramas, that it would include dances. In ISKCON, I see now there's a lot of dance dramas about Krishna rather than just dramas. And your experience with classes, with Shastra classes, that, and please, in the breakout group, please don't use names of people unless it's complimentary. Please don't use any names for uncomplimentary. But I'd like you to think about your good and bad experiences. So when you've had experiences with poetry and drama, where you really experience some flavor of love for Krishna, and when you didn't. And I can tell you my own experience. So in 1976, Srila Prabhupada visited the New York temple, the big 55th Street temple. He came for the Rath Yatra. He was there for about 10 days. And during that time, the devotees who they were in the theater group, which I joined later, I joined, I think, 1979. So they were regularly performing the Ramayana. The 55th Street temple had a professional theater with everything professional. Seating, stage, backstage, lighting booth. We have that also at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So the devotees were performing. It's interesting, these devotees have all left. They've all left this world. Rasagya was Sita, and her husband Loitaksha, her actual husband Loitaksha, was Ram. David is still with us. He was Jatayu. Lokamangala was Ravana. So they weren't performing the whole Ramayana that night. They were performing a portion of it. And I was sitting a few seats behind Srila Prabhupada, maybe like two seats behind Srila Prabhupada. So I remember particularly in the scene in the forest when Jatayu is fighting with Ravana to try to rescue Sita. So on the stage there was Jatayu and Ravana and Sita. And Ravana's holding Sita and trying to kidnap her, and Jatayu is challenging Ravana to a fight. And Sita says, "No, Jatayu, don't! You are old, and he is so much stronger than you." And somehow with those words, I felt that New York City had melted away, that the theater had melted away, that we were in the Dandaka forest, and there was actually Sita, and actually Ravana, and actually Jatayu. And I was really overwhelmed with emotions of fear that Jatayu was going to be hurt and Sita is going to be kidnapped. It was an absolutely amazing and incredible experience. I'm sure it was some sort of a buzz I was getting by being in Srila Prabhupada's presence. But that was one of my experiences with drama. So I'd like you to think of some experience that you had as we're going through this, preferably a favorable one, but you might also talk about some unfavorable ones. So why is Rupa Goswami talking about poetry and drama? Because this whole system he's getting for the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu comes from Bharat Muni's system, which is all about poetry and drama. So the question arises, that is rasa produced by poetry and drama in general? Okay. So it may appear that poetry and drama about the Lord are the main cause of experiencing rasa. But the real cause for rasa is rati, which is inconceivable, sweet, and astonishing. So the real cause is this dibhav. So for someone who has even a little tiny sprout of rati, now this is important because a sprout of rati is going to come in a sadhaka. A sprout of rati isn't, we're not talking about bhava and prema, we're talking a little sprout. So that person can realize to some degree all the elements of rasa. Now they're not combined, as Rukmini asked, until prema. But there can be a little sprout, and a person experiences some beginning taste. Just like it's explained, there's some element, some aspect of prema that's present even in Adushraddha. Something. When Rupa Goswami explains earlier, in Nectar Devotion, the very beginning of his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the qualifications for taking up bhakti is taste. You have some taste. Oh, Krishna is nice. Now, sometimes there's irregularities in drama. So the reason we put this picture here, this is Mahaprabhu with Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar. I couldn't find a lot of pictures of Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar was the one who would filter to make sure that all of the poetry, all of the descriptions, all of the writings of anyone was not going to have something improper. And the example given by in Jiva Goswami's commentary is that if you show Radharani as being older than Krishna, I remember one Indian movie that I was seeing about Krishna, where Radharani looked like she was 35, and it was really distasteful. You know, it's like Radharani doesn't look like that. The actress was a little overweight, and she looked, I don't know how old she actually was, but she looked old. She looked older. And it was just like, right? So when there's irregularities or unsuitable, then Rati becomes restricted instead of nourished. I know I used to, when I ran a school, I didn't allow the comics, the Amar Chitrakata comics in the school, because I felt the way that Krishna was portrayed there was actually distant. My own opinion, you may have a different opinion, was actually distasteful. So this is a really interesting point. Now, of course, this applies somewhat, even materially. And again, the system Rupa Goswami is giving, Prabhupada's describing, is coming from Bharat Muni, who's talking about drama and poetry in general. So even in mundane poetry, if I'm watching a film about Superman, you know, I may identify somewhat with Superman or with Lois Lane or, you know, sorry, I used to watch Superman TV when I was a kid. So I may identify somewhat with the characters. Right? If Superman's in trouble, I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. So there's some identification between the audience and the character, even in ordinary drama. But here we have something going on that's beyond ordinary drama, because rasa is not material. And so when one is watching spiritual drama or listening also to poetry, it's not just drama, it's also poetry. Poetry includes the Bhagavatam is considered poetry, for example. Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, Ramayana, these are all, they're all epic poems. This is true also, of course, with bhajans. So what can happen is that the person hearing, watching, identifies with the personalities in the drama or poetry. And this is very strongly explained in this section of Nectar Devotion. And Jiva Goswami is quoting Sahitya Darpana 11 to 14. He says, the devotee plunges into the ocean experienced by previous devotees. Previous devotees means the devotees who are being depicted or talked about in the drama or in the narrative. And there's awakening, Jiva Goswami says, of chivalry and other bhavas with an experience identical to that of the ancient devotees. And this is repeated in this section of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu quite a few times. That the devotee who's watching the drama, the devotee who's hearing the narration, starts to experience the same bhavas, the same sthayi bhavas, the same vyavichari bhavas, as the devotees that are being portrayed in the narrative or in the drama. And Jiva Goswami says, no man at all is condemned for entering that ocean. So there's nothing wrong with that. You're not going to say, oh, that's improper. No. No, it's not improper. In fact, that is the point of this hearing. And this is why this hearing is so much stressed. So we have Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. And he says, hearing during a recitation of Ramayana how Hanuman jumped over the ocean, sometimes a sympathetic devotee absorbed in that mood, giving up all shyness, jumps up amidst the hearers in order to cross the ocean. He also said, which I didn't put in the slideshow, that hearing about Dasarath, he might also die. I remember Pankajan Ungri, who's recently passed away from COVID, that one time there was some discussion of this. I don't remember if the devotees were singing the mantras to Nisingadev or reading about Nisingadev. I don't remember exactly the impetus. But he jumped up and he started roaring like Nisingadev. So it actually became manifest as an anubhav. Uh, So Bharat Muni, who's of course talking about drama in general, poetry in general, he says, in the matter of identification, there's an indescribable power in Vibhava and other elements by which the audience becomes non-different from the characters depicted on the stage. And again, I'm sure we've all experienced this, if any of us have even watched any mundane theater or drama or read a mundane book, and we find that we feel the same as the character. The character's struggles, the character's emotions become our emotions. So even in mundane works, but when we're speaking about transcendent works, that really happens. We really feel the emotions of those persons. And there's no condemnation. That's what's supposed to happen. So this is why we're supposed to be hearing. So the characters depicted, the personalities depicted in the drama, or as we're hearing the Bhagavatam poetry, Ramayana poetry, Acharya's songs, the various personalities we're hearing about are apparently going to be experiencing suffering or apparently experiencing happiness. As the reason I'm saying apparently is from a material point, it looks like suffering and happiness. It's all happiness. So when the devotee who's watching this drama or the devotee who's hearing these narrations, when they feel the suffering of that devotee, they're feeling that the suffering of Sita was suffering, Jatayu was suffering, Hanuman was suffering, the gopis are suffering, when Krishna goes to Mathura, the devotee's overwhelmed with compassion, but it's very blissful. It's an astonishing bliss of compassion as the person identifies with those persons. The person hearing, the person watching, is identifying with the personalities, the ancient personalities that are being depicted. So the so-called difficulty of those persons brings out this bliss of compassion. And then the happiness of those persons, one's hearing about, seeing about, one feels great happiness. Oh, Sita's been rescued. Sita's reunited with Ram. Krishna's with his devotees at Kurukshetra. And one feels great happiness. So the person hearing is feeling two kinds of bliss. At the apparent difficulties in the lila, they're feeling a bliss of compassion. At the apparent joys, and apparent I'm saying because it's all joys, the devotee is feeling great happiness. So if even a little bit of the elements of rasa related to the Lord manifest in the devotee here at present time, who's absorbed in the pastimes of previous devotees. So we're absorbed in the pastimes of Maharaj Prithu. We're absorbed in the pastimes of Satyavrata Muni. We're absorbed in the pastimes of Rukmini. We're absorbed in the pastimes of the Cowherd Boys. Then immediately there's full satisfaction from all the elements of rasa. Now, although we say full satisfaction, that depends, of course, on the level of realization of the listening devotee, full according to their level of realization. So if we're going to contrast ordinary poetry and drama with poetry and drama about the Lord and the devotees, so in ordinary dramas, the characters portrayed are ordinary. We're, you know, reading a book about, I don't know, Margaret Thatcher, or you're reading a book about Booker T. Washington, or some fictional person like Superman. But about the Lord and the devotees, the personalities portrayed are divine. In poetry and drama, the actors or reciters are doing a job. Now, of course, some actors or reciters really care. Somebody maybe, you know, they're acting in a drama about somebody because they really care about that person. So they're, right? They're really moved by whatever, you know, Gandhi, like there was a movie about Gandhi. And the actor playing Gandhi, maybe he wanted to play that role, I don't know, but maybe he wanted to play that role because he really loved Gandhi and he really wanted to bring Gandhi, make him come alive for the audience. Maybe it wasn't just a job. But generally, the actors or reciters, they're doing a job. They're doing it because they're getting paid. They may have some inspiration about the script. They may have some inspiration about the characters, but they're doing a job. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, the divine personalities can enter into the reciter or actor if there is full sympathy. And I've personally had this experience. So I've acted in a number of dramas in the Hare Krishna movement, and I've had this experience, and other actors have also had this experience, that the divine personalities enter into them. I remember talking with one devotee who played Mother Yasoda in drama, and she told me, I felt like I was enlivened. Of course, it's going to be just something. Prabhupada says if we can experience the mood of the residents of Vrindavan even to a minute degree. But she was telling me she really felt the bhava of Mother Yasoda enter into her. And again, I've had this personal experience as an actor. And certainly I've seen this, heard this from other actors. You know, in Vrindavan, when they do leelas about Krishna, they take it that the actors become like the deity, like Krishna enlivens the stone deity or the metal deity, that Krishna enlivens the actors. Radharani enlivens the actors. And so they don't announce the names at the end of the drama. They don't say, you know, well, Sunil was playing Krishna, and they don't say like that. They treat them as if, as long as they're doing the drama, not when they get out of costume, but as long as they're doing the drama, they're treating them as the divine personalities have actually entered into them, and that is what happens. So in ordinary drama, it's only the hearer or the audience is the cause of the taste. So ordinary drama, you know, I'm a 10-year-old kid sitting in my house watching Superman on TV. And whatever taste I'm experiencing, it's happening in me. It's my imagination. Because it's an ordinary person being depicted, and the actors are just doing a job, but I'm imagining something and having some taste. And Rukmini makes a good point. He said, so the actor doesn't have to be in the same primary rasa as the divine personality for that personality to enter the actor. That is absolutely correct. Yes. That is definitely and absolutely correct. So the actor is taking on a role, and in that role, that divine personality enters into them, and that personality... I mean, with mundane actors, this happens to some extent. I remember reading about the famous actress Meryl Streep, and how she would so much get into the character. Her husband was saying, I felt like, you know, I've been married to 1,000 different women. I mean, sometimes it's actually a problem for the actor if they're playing a very disturbed character. You know, and we all know that actors sometimes fall in love with each other because they're acting as if they're in love with each other, right? Everybody knows that. That some actor, you know, there's actors playing husband and wife in the stage and film, and they have their real husbands and wives, but they fall in love with each other as the characters, and they actually fall in love with each other, and they have an affair, and etc. This happens because they start to take on the character of the personality. So what to speak of in transcendent drama? Yes, when you... And this can happen also in a narration, not only in a drama. I mean, I've seen it happen very strongly in a drama, but it can also happen in a narration. So if one is reciting the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the various works of the Acharyas, or singing the songs of the Acharyas, so that the mood of the personalities that one is talking about or one is singing about can enter into oneself. Even if one is realized one's Stai Bhav, and one has a Stai Bhav of whatever, a servant, and if one has Dasya Bhav, but one is talking about the cowherd boys, then the cowherd boys will enter into one for that recitation, and one can be communicating that mood. So in transcendent poetry and drama, the cause of taste is the original personalities that are being portrayed, the actors or reciters, and the audience all together can cause rasa. How are sahajiyas different? Okay, sahajiyas are, there's many different types of sahajiyas. Sahajiyas are generally people who imagine something that they're not actually qualified for. And they're pretending, we talked about this formerly with Sattvic above, like a person just practices to emote something. The sahajiyas are more like these actors or reciters who are doing a job. So here we have, in ordinary drama, the actors or reciters are doing a job. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada tells us not to hear Bhagavatam and not to watch dramas for people that are doing it just as a job. Now, whether or not somebody gets some dakshin for it is not the thing. It's whether or not a person's doing it just as a job. Like, they don't really care. They don't really have an attraction for Krishna. They're not doing it to glorify Krishna. They're just doing it to make money. That's their only motive. Again, the fact that you might pay someone's ticket to come and do a dance, and you might give them some compensation for the dance, that doesn't make it professional. That could be a yajna with dakshin. But the point is, are you doing it as a job or are you doing it to glorify Krishna? So the sahajiyas get into this, some sahajiyas get into this pretense where they think, you know, just like Meryl Streep and other actors, they can portray that there's someone else so expertly that their own personality is no longer evident. Only the personality of the character is evident. But that's just a practice thing. Sahajiyas also generally don't feel that they have to follow regular principles or morality. So one of the big differences between actually experiencing these higher things and being a sahajiya is, like Prabhupada would say, the sahajiyas, they do some Krishna drama and then they're like, oh, I'm tired, I need to smoke cigarettes. You know, now I need to drink coffee. And they'll have illicit affairs in the name of Krishna consciousness. So Rukmini is making the point that if one considers prestige as a type of compensation, it becomes difficult for an audience member to determine whether someone else is acting for that reason. Yes, that's true. And of course, we can make a pretty reasonable assumption that when the other members of our ISKCON society are acting in a drama or are giving a class, that they're not on the platform of prema. I mean, I am sure that we have devotees in our sanghas who are on the platform of prema. However, it's also a reasonable assumption, manushyanam sahasresu kashchidirati sidayetamsatapisidanam kashchimam beti tatvitaha. It's also a reasonable assumption that at any given time, the number of devotees in our sangha who are at the platform of prema is going to be in the minority. That we probably don't have, 80% of our devotees in the platform of prema or in the platform of bhava. So there's going to be some, even in bhava, there's some scent of anartha. So there's going to be some mixture. It's a reasonable assumption that when we're hearing a drama or hearing a class from someone, that there's some mixed motives there. And we as the hearers may also have some mixed motives. I mean, that's a reasonable assumption. However, we're still experiencing something, and that we'll also get into a bit later. So we're still experiencing something, like talking about a sprout of rati, or maybe we're experiencing an abhas of rati. So something. Whereas with sahajiyas, it's all external. It's all just pretense. Because they're not really engaging in the process. Okay, so with the proper characters, actors, and spectators, rasa will manifest. And this is far superior to the bliss of liberation because it gives bliss even to the Lord. So when you have the proper actors and the proper hearers, then the Lord is happy. Yes, Prabhupada Priya.
I was just wondering if a person has a particular sthayi bhav and then they hear, they watch a drama where another sthayi bhav is being presented, and then they identify with that because the presentation is so amazing, that these divine personalities enter into it. Can that be confusing?
That's a very good question, because we had earlier the concept that the Staibov is the king of both the contradictory and the non-contradictory other emotions. So there are certain tastes that are contradictory for each Staibov. Like we read about Patrika, where he's with Krishna and the friends are joking and get very casual, and so Patri also starts becoming casual, and then he pulls back, and like, no, I don't want to become casual. So do remember that there is appreciation. So every devotee has appreciation for the moods of all the other devotees. You know, the time when Prabhupada got furious at the Gopi Bhava Club was when they criticized Mother Yasoda. So when the devotees in that Gopi Bhava Club, when they said something disparaging about Mother Yasoda, that's when Srila Prabhupada became like fire and closed it down. Because that's an indication that it's not real. It's an indication that it's just something pretense. It's just somebody pretending to be something that they aren't. So everyone in every mood appreciates all the other moods. And you know, the acharyas explain how in Goloka, in the spiritual world, that every evening there's entertainment. And in the entertainment, what's being depicted is the Lord's various incarnations and the various pastimes of the devotees. So in the spiritual world, the residents there, they're watching dramas of Nrsingadev. They're watching dramas of Lord Ramachandra. They're watching dramas of all different leelas. And they're appreciating, although it's not theirs. And do remember, we have a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva. There is a oneness also. So there is a oneness between all the devotees, where they can experience the bliss of the other devotees while not wanting it as theirs. If you want to think of a mundane example, the example that I like to give is you go to a wedding. So if you go to a wedding and the bride and the groom are looking at each other with love. I remember at my oldest son's wedding when he took the veil off of his bride and they looked at each other. I mean, I wasn't actually the first time they saw each other. But when they looked at each other at the wedding, the priest conducted the wedding said, "Nuclear bomb." So everyone experienced in that moment that the bride and the groom look at each other for the first time in the wedding. All the audience experiences some of the love of the bride and the groom. But it's not theirs. You don't feel romantic attraction for the bride or for the groom. But still you feel some of their love also enters into you. Or, you know, the bride's mother is crying as she's hugging her daughter, and you're not the bride's mother. But as you see that, as you're there, you experience some of that as yours. It doesn't mean that you think you're the bride's mother, but some of that parental experience enters into you. So that's the best example that I can give. Our timing is really getting bad here. Okay, so whenever there is a recitation of poetry or a dramatic play on the different pastimes of Krishna, the audience develops different kinds of transcendental loving service for the Lord. They enjoy different types of Vibhava, Anubhava, and Sanchari Bhava. This is from Srila Prabhupada. So this also answers your question. So that when we're seeing this drama, we experience these different emotions of the personalities that we're seeing. And of course, we have this wonderful verse. This is quoted in this part of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where the gopis are describing the pastimes, hearing the pastimes, this is in Gopi Gita, that the nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities are the life and soul of those suffering in this material world. These narrations transmitted by learned sages eradicate one's sinful reactions and bestow good fortune upon whomever hears them. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Certainly those who spread the message of Godhead are most munificent. All right, we're going to have a breakout time. So please each person should discuss at least one positive or one negative if they want. Please don't use names for a negative experience with devotional drama or devotional hearing, so we can start that break.
Recording in progress.
Okay, I'm sorry, because of our technical difficulties in the beginning that our timing is a little off. So I hope you bear with me. We're going to do a few more things and then we'll take a break, so just messed up all the timings. We are going to be a little late today. Please excuse me. I, as you know, I really try to be very punctual. So how do we understand rasa? That such manifestations are displays, the Prabhupada says, of the transcendental pleasure potency of the Lord. One should simply try to understand that on the spiritual platform there are many varieties of reciprocal love. Such loving exchanges should never be considered to be material. So this is Prabhupada giving this warning. You know, we're not going to, until we're actually experiencing it ourselves, we're not going to fully understand it, but at least we can say it's not material. Okay, I haven't yet eaten a mango. Maybe I've just smelled it. Maybe I had a drop of mango juice on my tongue. I haven't really sat down and eaten a mango yet. So I can't really understand it, but I can understand, oh, it's sweet, it's juicy, and so forth. So we can understand, at least in some way, and we'll discuss this more at the end of the class, that it is transcendental. And just using material logic is not going to give us understanding. So in the Mahabharata Bhishma Parva, it's warned that things which are inconceivable should not be subject to arguments. Actually, the transactions of the spiritual world are inconceivable to us in our present state of life. So we can understand something through argument and logic. Krishnadas Kaviraj says we should apply our argument and logic to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Certainly everything is explained. Our acharyas do explain everything very logically. We can say this whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a very logical explanation. At the same time, these things are not subject, Mahalakshmi will have questions in a couple minutes, these things are not subject to just logic and arguments. So we are getting hints. As Srila Prabhupada says, great liberated souls like Rupa Goswami and others have tried to give us some hints of transcendental activities in the spiritual world, but on the whole, these transactions will remain inconceivable to us at the present moment. So Prabhupada was writing this in 1969. He was writing it for the world in general, and hopefully by 2021, we do have members of our Sangha who are experiencing these things. But in general, like I heard someone yesterday say, everyone is a neophyte. I'm like, no, not everyone is a neophyte. He says, it's only offensive if you single out some group and say, these people are neophytes. As long as you call everybody a neophyte. I said, no, that's not a fact. We have many very advanced devotees in our Vaishnava Sanghas. Many. A small percentage always will be. We're constantly getting in new people and so forth. But we do have many. Still, in general, we can say that those studying nectar devotion, bhakti rasamrita sindhu, they are getting some hints. Right? Prabhupada goes on, understanding the exchanges of the transcendental loving service with Krishna is possible only when one is in touch with the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. So that, of course, there's some hints from the Mahatmanastumam Partam Diving Prakriti Mashrita, even from the beginning of practicing bhakti, one is under the shelter of the divine energy of the Lord. However, until the rays of the Ladini Shakti illuminate the heart at Bhava, one is getting just some hints. So love is the basis for all of this rasa. It's the basic connection of love, the staibhav, the rati, that causes Krishna to be the stimulant as object. Right? The Vibhava, Alambana, Vishaya, and for the devotee to be the stimulant as shelter, the Vibhava, Alambana, Ashraya. This then produces emotions, Vyavichari Bhavs, voluntary Anubhavs, and involuntary Sattvika Bhavs, actions, and the total taste, Rasa, which increases this basic connection, the Stai Bhav of love even more. So without some basic connection of love, even if it's a beginning neutrality, even if it's neutrality is a stage, then these other things are not going to be there. So there has to be some love. This is not just theoretical. It's not just philosophical. Love is nourishing love. The example is given, the ocean nourishes the clouds, which then pour rain on the ocean. Right? As Srila Prabhupada says, thus the pleasure potency of Krishna is compared to the ocean. The pure devotee is the pleasure-possessing cloud, and when he is filled with transcendental loving service, then he can bestow his mercy as a downpour of rain, and the pleasure potency returns to the ocean of Krishna. Love is nourishing love. So all the elements of rasa mutually reveal each other and assist each other. The only cause for rasa is love. Rasa is self-revealing. It's not dependent on the mind. It's not dependent on other factors. Rasa consists of rasa and nothing else. So as sadhakas, we are using the body, we are using the mind, but we should not have any conviction, like Prabhupada says earlier in Nectar Devotion. Actually, there is no practice to awaken this. So we should have the conviction that I am not causing. It's not that by my waving incense, am I chanting the holy name, am I distributing books, am I going on pilgrimage, that I'm causing. No. Not like that. I'm expressing my desire to the Lord, who will then reciprocate with me. Right? That's what's happening. Krishna's reciprocating, and he's revealing by his internal energy. Tesham satyata yuktana bhajatam priti purvakam didami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te tesham eva anukam partham aham agyana jantamah nasayami atma bhava sto gyana dipena bhashvita. So as we much chitam magita pranam bodhayantas prasparam katayantas chumam nitam chashanti charamanti cha, as we hear and chant about Krishna, then we get this satisfaction and bliss because Krishna's reciprocating with us. Okay, we are over time, but I do want to just stop at just 5 minutes. We don't have time for very many questions. Mahalakshmi, yes?
Well, so nicely explained. It is very helpful. Yet when I listen right now, that logic cannot be used for us to understand what is being described about these exchanges of love. Yet, while reading, and so many things I don't understand, I read something and say, how is this possible? There are things hard to accept, like feelings of envy and pride and all these things. And if I don't understand it, it makes it hard to keep on reading.
We didn't say logic cannot be used. We said logic is not the cause.
Okay.
So let's say you have... I had an experience many years ago. I was going to visit my mother in New York, and she arranged for me to stay in an empty apartment, an empty flat, of a friend of hers that was upstairs from her flat. Those people were out of town. So as I stayed in that apartment, in that flat, on the table, they call it a coffee table, but there was like a table in the living room, and there was a book there that had been written by the son of the owner of that apartment. So evidently the son of the owner of that apartment was a professor, and he had written a book, believe it or not, on Rasleela. You believe that?
Yeah.
So I'm staying in the apartment. My mother had no idea. You know, she was friends with the parents. She knew the son was a professor, but she didn't know that he had written a book on Krishna's Rasleela. It was horrible. I was feeling disgusted. Because he was trying to understand Krishna and Krishna's Rasleela just through Pratyaksha Anuman. Just through logic. And boy, did he fail. I mean, like, wow. It was just wrong. It was awful. I don't remember the details. I intentionally erased them from my memory. So if we're going to try to approach rasa just through logic, just through our brain, just through our study, we will fail. That doesn't mean the devotees can't use logic. You know, what are we going to do? I mean, we have a body and mind. We're going to use our body and mind. But that's not the cause of our understanding. The cause is grace. We're invoking grace by using what we have. We're not the cause. Krishna's heart is melted. The devotee's heart is melted, seeing our effort. I might have given this example before, that in the 70s, the devotees were furtively passing around this book called Fascinating Womanhood by this Christian lady, How to Be a Good Wife. And it was a very good book, actually. I would still recommend it. So one of her ideas there is, let's say you're trying to get your husband to do some household thing. You want him to paint the wall or fix the door or something, and he's not doing it. And I once saw a funny meme, you know, ladies, you don't have to keep reminding us. We heard you 6 months ago. You know, so the husband who never gets to the household chores. So she said, one thing you can do is start doing it yourself. And then your husband will jump, oh, you don't have to do it, I'll do it. I have seen this work so many times, not just with the husband, but in general. In general, you know, somebody who's expert, you want them to do something, they don't do it. And so you try to do it, and then they feel sympathy for you. You see this with parents and children, you know, the child is trying to do something, and they can't, but they're trying. And the parents' hearts melt, and then they jump in and do it. So we're trying, we're reaching out to Krishna. Oh, Hare Krishna, we're trying, we're using what we have, we're using our contaminated body, disgusting body, we're using our contaminated mind, our contaminated emotions, that's all we have. We don't have anything else. We just have this thing. But we're using it, and we're saying, I'm going to worship you. I'm going to offer you a flower. Krishna's not interested in our flowers that hardly even have any fragrance. You know, he's got much better flowers. Krishna, I'm going to offer you some food. I mean, come on. He's got Lakshmi Devi cooking for him. And what am I going to cook? I mean, it's silly. So we're also using our logic. And Krishna's melted. Oh, this person's trying to figure me out. They're trying to understand me. Look at that. And so he reveals himself. Ratnam Prabhu, and then we're going to take a break.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Mataji, it's regarding question regarding Jatila and Kutila. Mainly, they are not in Vibhachari Bhava because Vibhachari Bhava is temporary and they are permanently mimicked towards Krishna. So, is it secondary Sthayi Bhava, Mataji? Or is this, that mean in case secondary Sthayi Bhava is permanent, Mataji?
You're asking what is the Sthayi Bhava of Jatila and Kutila?
Yes, Mataji.
I'm not sure about Kutila, but Jatila definitely it's parental. It's definitely parental. She's not really inimical.
Yeah, correct.
She's not actually inimical. Mm-hmm. That's Yogamaya that she's inimical. She's not actually inimical. And the reason that I can say this, interestingly enough, because we had this whole section about poetry and drama, is that one time at the Govardhan retreat, I was pulled into a drama, and I mentioned this the other day, I think, in the class. You can see it if you want. It's on YouTube. Maybe I can find the link and send it. So it's like a series of 9 videos, each about 7 to 10 minutes long, each scene. So it's a story of where Jatila and Katila forbid Radharani from cooking for Krishna. And so Radharani enters into deep separation. It's described like she was bitten by a snake of separation, and she's going to die. And so Jatila calls for a doctor, a snake doctor, who happens to be Krishna in disguise as a woman. And this Krishna disguised as a lady doctor, which you might note, interestingly, 5,000 years ago, they had lady doctors. You might just kind of note that. This concept that in Vedic times all the woman did was cooking and cleaning is a bunch of nonsense. They had lady doctors. I mean, when they asked Radharani, you know, we're going to get a doctor, she said, don't get a male doctor. She said, if a male doctor touches even my toe, I will die. So anyway, of course it was actually Krishna. So Jatila goes to this doctor, this so-called doctor, and brings so-called lady doctor into her house. And this so-called lady doctor, who's actually Krishna, cures Radharani. And then Jatila asks this so-called lady doctor, who's actually Krishna, to spend the night in her house. So she invites Krishna into her house. She invites Krishna to be alone with Srimati Radharani. She invites Arad and Krishna to spend the night together on a flower bed on the roof. And I will tell you very frankly that when I was doing this drama, some of the mood of Jatila actually entered into me. It actually happened. This thing that Rupa Goswami is describing, that Jiva Goswami is describing, I had that experience. And I had the experience that I was, I mean, it was to a minute degree, but still I had the experience that I was in the Leela. My daughter was playing Krishna. When I was in the drama, I had zero awareness that my daughter was, that it was my daughter in this life. Zero. I had absolutely no awareness that that was my daughter as an actor and I was her mother as an actor. I also had zero awareness that it was Krishna in disguise. I was not aware when I was in the drama that it was Krishna. I actually lost that awareness. And somewhere, way back, like a tiny dot of light, I had some awareness that Krishna is God and that I loved Krishna. It was there. But my main mood was that I was taking care of Radharani and I loved Radharani and I wanted to protect Radharani from Krishna. That was the main mood that was filling me. And I remember at the end of the drama, I would say that I asked Lalita to prepare a flower bed on the roof for this doctor, this so-called doctor, to spend the night with Radharani. And when I said that line, I experienced some ecstatic emotion, to the point that it was actually very difficult for me to recite that line. And I absolutely am sure, absolutely positively am sure, that my eternal role in the spiritual world is not Jatila or anything like Jatila. That, you know, I don't have any doubt about that at all. So I'm not like Jatila's, I'm not an eternal associate of Jatila. But I did experience some of her mood. I learned a lot about what Yoga Maya means, doing that role. It was quite an incredible experience. I'm sure that a lot of the reason that I had that experience is the drama was right at the foot of Govardhan Hill. We had people in the audience. Giriraj Swami was in the audience. Sachinandan Maharaj was in the audience. I mean, we had many, Narayani was in the audience. We had many great souls there. And just like I experienced as an audience member with Srila Prabhupada, not that I'm saying that those people are on the level of Srila Prabhupada, but as I experienced as an audience member with Srila Prabhupada, that I entered into the Ramayana, so I experienced as an actor that in that association, I was enlivened with that personality. And I will tell you, she is experiencing ecstatic love for Krishna, without any doubt at all. She doesn't understand it very well. So when she's experiencing ecstasy and asking this fake doctor to spend the night with Radharani, she doesn't know why she's so ecstatic. She thinks she's so ecstatic because Radharani has been cured. That's why she thinks she's ecstatic. She doesn't realize she's ecstatic because she's arranged for the union of Radha and Krishna. That she doesn't understand. Not in Yogamaya. But she's not actually an antagonist. All right, 10-minute break. We are really off time. This class is going to go late today because we had those technical difficulties in the beginning. I ask for your forgiveness for that. 10-minute break. Hare Krishna.
No, nothing.
10-minute break. Take a real break. Get outside. Drink some water. Take a walk.
Recording stopped.